Welcome to the Investor Coaching Show, a podcast to help you get an insider's view of the financial world and escape common investment traps. We look at the financial news of the day and help you make sense of it so you can relax about money. And here's your host, Paul Winkler.
We were off at a financial conference this week, and that was really, really fun.
It was.
We got a best-selling book coming. I mean, literally on pre-orders already, a best-selling book.
Yeah.
It's hit the New York Times level, you know, whether it'll make it through that the gates because of it's talking about something that sometimes is not necessarily accepted in wider circles, that the American dream is actually alive and well. And that it is available to all that will want to pursue it, that want to actually, and you know, you can, it's people listening to Change or Die.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So Evan, I don't know, have you, either one of you guys actually listened to that book?
I have not. Or, I know the story of the book, but I haven't listened to it.
Yeah. So I actually decided to pick it up after listening to so many people talk about it.
Right.
And it is really, really good. And you know, it's looking at change and going, okay, so do you want to change? Do you want life to be better? Whether it be your investments to be better, your life to be better, you want to quit smoking, you want to lose weight, you want to, you know, you got heart to, and literally people will put themselves in a position of, you know, death.
Right.
Right.
Imminent death.
And you they mean won't by change. Not changing. Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And they, you know, they know that they aren't, you know, that they are terminal.
Uh-huh.
If they keep going with the way they're going, and yet they still won't change.
Yeah.
And the point that he made was, you know, you got literally a nine to one chance is the way he puts it.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the odds are really against you making the change.
Oh, yeah.
And it's because typically, how do we make change? How do we get people to change? Fear, intimidation, coercion.
Right.
And
right.
That is not what creates change. That is not what creates a better life. You know what the number one thing that creates a better life is? Actually encouraging people that they can do it, that you can do this.
Right.
And then repeat whatever patterns that you pick up and whatever it is that you, the changes that you got to make, get people to repeat it and then reframe it.
Yeah.
Those are the three things. And to me, I look at what we do here, you know, like we educate and people, and I was thinking about this on the way in, guys.
Yeah.
And this is where I want to hear what you have to say about this, because
never ask me my opinion on a long segment.
Evan, I always ask your opinion because you always have one, because I love it. But, you know, here's the thing that I think about a lot. Often we are talked about as, you know, on the station by everybody that's on in this station.
Yeah.
They always talk about, what about us? What do we do that nobody else does?
Correct.
Right. What is it? What is it that we do that nobody else does?
Teach.
Yes.
Yeah, coach.
Educate.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was thinking about that on the way in. So why is it that maybe somebody would hear that and not respond because they don't think they can understand it?
Yes, I would agree with that.
Agreed.
So one of the metaphors that I use quite often, and I used with several of the financial advisors of this conference, is something I've used, you guys have heard me do it a million times. But we were talking about just the putting together of portfolios and why we do what we do and how the, you know, academic research and all of this stuff, and even the academics can't stick with the research, right?
That was kind of an interesting segment, but yes.
It was hugely interesting. I mean, you have these people that have come out and basically said that, you know what, stock picking, market timing, doing all of this stuff that you're doing using past performance does not work. It does not work.
And they got Nobel Prizes for it.
And they get Nobel Prizes for it. And then they go on to tell stories of how they didn't do what their research said.
Exactly.
And how it came back to bite them. But I'm thinking, they did the research saying you can't do this.
I think something that jumped out at one of those segments was, to me, that's actually a very good example of familiarity bias.
Okay.
And there was a comment made by one of the people that had, I won't say cheated, had invested against the research that they created.
Yes.
And, you know, well, I didn't do an analysis of this mix of investments, but I've seen a lot of portfolios and I, you know, I think, and I know what I'm doing because I've been around this a lot.
I can beat the system.
Right. And what immediately came to mind for me was you typically won't hear a pilot jump into a 777 and say, you know, I've been flying a while. Let's just not do the checklist this time. Let's just back up.
And let's not even do the training
and,
on this
and fly
airplane
to London.
You know, it's
right?
Probably just exactly like the 727.
But you know, you think you're familiar and that's when you get messed up.
Yeah, it's so often ego is what drags people down.
Yeah.
You know, just
overconfidence.
The overconfidence bias. And so I was thinking about the education process. And one of the things I did with so many of the advisors at the conference is I just said, you know, guys, let me just explain the way I explain diversification. I said, you got a race we're coming up to. We got a race and everyone knows exactly where I'm going. And there's a veil in front of the racetrack and you have people can bring whatever vehicle that they want to the race. So one person shows up with a snowmobile, the other one with a race car, the other one with a motorcycle, and the other one with a dune buggy. And race day comes, and you can't see what the track is. You have no clue whether you've brought the right vehicle or not.
Yeah.
And then the veil comes up, and all of a sudden, it's snow. So I was explaining to this guy, and I said, so let's say that you have a period coming forward. Now, out of all the four vehicles that I named, which one's the slowest of them? You know, probably snowmobile.
I'll take snowmobiles for 500.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, so you look at that and you say, okay, so maybe that's the bonds that right. Do okay in the terrain, because if the veil comes up and it's snow, the snowmobile will take that leg of the race regardless of the fact that it is the slowest vehicle of all of them, right?
And even if it's not a good snowmobile, it will still take the race.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
That's a good point.
So, you know, we look at that and we say, okay, now, and then all of a sudden it turns to dry pavement and the race car takes that leg of the race.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden it turns to, you know, sand and, you know, the dune buggy takes that leg of the race. And then it's a treed course. And, you know, so in my book, you know, Confident Investing, this is the analogy that I use or the metaphor that I use. And my point, as I was telling this and I'm talking about this, I'm going, wait a minute, you want to develop confidence in people? Give them a metaphor like that and help them understand that this is not that hard to understand. You can get it. But the investment industry is all about confusing you to the point of where you just give up and say, I can't do it. I don't have the ability to do it. And then what you do is you don't do it. You don't get involved. You don't try to understand anything that's going on. And then the second that the terrain is dry pavement for a while, you want to jump on the race car.
Right.
Right.
To the exclusion of all the other vehicles. And when in reality, what we know is that sure as anything, the terrain is going to change. And that is why you diversify. It's going to all of a sudden become a treed course at some point. And that's why you absolutely must make sure that you have diversification. And this is what we don't see in the investing world. We do not see that level of diversification.
Yeah. I wonder if we could get, you know, models of each of those things, physical models, not like a psychological model.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And put a trailer hitch on the front and back of each of those.
Okay.
And have the three vehicles towed by the snowmobile, the first segment. And then we get to the next part, and then we pull that one behind, and the race car tows the other three. That's actually
That's funny.
The analogy.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I see how it is.
Because you want to have all four there. You can't just sell the race car and go buy a snowmobile because you got a new segment.
Yeah, because once you get to that pavement, you know, you want the race car right there so you can jump into that.
Exactly.
Thing. You know, that's I love that. I love that, Evan. You know, that's a good way to take it a little bit further.
Have Lincoln look for some toys.
Absolutely. He's listening right now, by the way, so you can tell him.
Raise your toy box, Lincoln.
So that to me, I think is key. That's step one.
Yeah.
Is you can understand this now. You know, to take it another step further. Okay, so once we get the snowmobile, you made the comment. You don't even have to have the best snowmobile, but you do want to have a good snowmobile. So how do you improve the vehicle that you show up in the race with?
Right. Yeah,
that's the other study that was just flooring me, which was 2%. Correct me, guys, if I'm wrong.
You're right, absolutely.
2% of financial advisors that were polled. Correct.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. 2% were polled and they were asked, can you use active management and passive management in concert with each other?
Right.
And only 2% said no, they are mutually exclusive. You separate those two things.
Right.
And, you know, hence I'm sitting there going, what? You have better chance of getting in an auto accident today. And I hope you don't. But right. you get a better chance of getting in an auto accident today than you have of having an investment portfolio run by a person that doesn't believe that nonsense.
Right.
It's like believing in the keto diet and carbo loading all at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. That's really, right. that's really good, James. Yeah, that's really good. I mean, it is. It's literally, you look at that and go, well, Paul, what are you guys, what are you guys talking about? You may be out there going, what on earth are you talking about? Okay, so you got this concept that, you know, you don't stock pick, you don't market time, because it is the assumption that stocks are improperly priced, that I can buy it for a lower price than what it's really worth. And then when the market figures it out, because they have an epiphany. And that epiphany tells them that the stock has been selling for too low compared to what it's really worth, and then it will jump in value, and that's how you make money in the stock market. Well, you know, that's the active story. Or market timing. I think I can move into this area right. of the market because I think this area is going to take off, and I think this area is not going to do as well, so I'm going to move away from this area. And, you know, that's the idea yeah. of active, you know, stock picking, market time, active management, inefficient market hypothesis is the kind of the idea behind that is what it's called in technical terms, versus efficient hypothesis is, you know, that is a huge waste of time. And what we see is in the 90% plus range, 93% for some asset categories, 96% for other asset categories,
yeah.
over 15 years, they can't match market returns because it doesn't work. It doesn't work. So in essence, what we're saying is, well, we can do a little bit of both. So no, here's the thing. If you think that markets are inefficient, just wait for when they are inefficient and stock pick and market time at those points in time.
Right.
Because you apparently got this down.
You almost have to engage in all three mistakes at the same time. It's almost impossible to only make one investing mistake at a time, meaning if I'm picking a stock,
yeah,
I'm picking it at a particular time because I'm trying to predict the future, and now I'm timing.
Sure.
And, you know, why did you even notice this stock? Because it was performing. You know, you can't
they're
just
so related.
Stock pick, or you can't just market time. You
sure.
All three of them you're using all the time, and they're all destructive.
Well, sure. Yeah. And if you're looking at stock picking, you know, especially if you're looking at bottom down investing, that philosophy,
mm-hmm.
because bottom down investing, for those of you who don't know anything what that means, it basically means you're looking at the macro, you're looking at the big picture, and you're trying to decide which companies will benefit from what is going on in general.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
What did I say?
Top. You said bottom down.
Oh, gosh.
Top down. That's right.
Yeah. No, you bottom down would be going to
I'm just picturing these cars.
That doesn't even make sense. You don't go bottom and further down. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, man. You know, somebody's got to pay attention to what I'm saying. there you go. That's why we have three of us in here.
That's right.
Top down investing is where you're looking at the macro. Exactly.
Yeah.
And what you're trying to decide is who is going to benefit from the macroeconomic circumstances that surround us.
Yes.
You know, so yeah, absolutely. They would be basically the same, and you're doing the same thing.
Well, and at the event
yes.
that y'all were at, I was at virtually.
You were virtually there.
I was at two conferences virtually at the same time.
Really?
I was on two screens for the last 3 days.
You're an animal.
Actually, that one wrapped up this morning. in the example that they shared of one of the Nobel Prize winners that kind of got off track, they were using this top-down analogy of, well, we had the hurricane, and so I figured it's going to be this and this and this, and it's just
Nobel Prize-winning economist.
You know, like, but and,
yeah,
and the point,
you're going to have a hurricane. You're going to need this particular product. Like, yeah, nobody else knows.
No one else knew there was a hurricane.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Wow. My TV was broken that day.
Right. You know, even... You know, even we, you know, we look at things and, you know, this is our world, right?
Sure.
And so we follow investment news. And of course, news has always traveled fast in the investment world. Uh-huh. Now it's just faster, right? You know, but back in the day, this is before James's time, but, you know, I actually saw, you know, saw a stock ticker running back, you know, way back when.
Sure.
The ticker tape. And, but everything moves that fast and everything can move a market. You know, if somebody has a bad experience at a restaurant, that thing can go viral and, you know, 300,000 people can see it. Or for just some isolated incident, you picture a large incident that everyone sees. 9/11, hurricanes,
yeah,
you know, COVID, whatever. Everybody is already aware and they're all coming to their own conclusions, which makes the market efficient.
Right.
You know,
right.
But yeah, trying to get ahead of other people with news is just impossible.
And I think, you know, just as I was just talking about what actually creates change.
Yeah.
To wrap this up. And before we go to break, the thing that I think that we have done really well over the 20 plus years that we've been doing this, and, you know, literally since the show, I started the show in 2001, is that we have been helping people understand that they can get this stuff. Now, sometimes, yeah, we may talk above their heads a little bit, but I think that's just to help people understand that it's not, you can't oversimplify it. You know, just throw everything right in an index fund and you'll be, you know, you'll be done. You know, because, and as I've talked about, the problem with index funds is are myriad. But the basic concepts can be understood, and what you need to know, you can understand if it is explained to you properly, number one,
mm-hmm.
and then repeat with step two. Give people, A, number one, give them hope that they can get this stuff. Number two, repeat so that maybe a few things they don't remember, they hear it again,
mm-hmm.
and they continually hear it, and then they're in a group with other people that are hearing it again, because we teach so often in groups, and we teach the same concepts, and we teach here on the radio. This is a huge group right here.
Mm-hmm.
And then reframe the idea of taking this whole concept of, you know, finance and reframing it in a way that it makes sense to people. And I think that is the key to success. And I think that is literally, to me, why we have done so well with what we've done with all of this. And just to the credit of the people out there that we work with, so many of you, thank you, that have stayed with us for so many years, you know, because we've been doing it for a long time, and we have some people that have been around for, you know, since day one.
Yeah.
Since day one. And the thing is they have gotten through this process, and they go, yeah, you know what? This has been, I don't worry about money anymore. I don't worry about my investments. I hear that all the time. But this is the thing, is I think with this process, and I just, for me, this whole, it just rejuvenated me being around other financial people.
Oh, yeah.
All week long. And it rejuvenated me to the point where I'm going to come in here blazing. You know, I'm really excited about the show going forward, because I'm thinking, wow, we've got some really good stuff coming. And I just can't wait to help people, because when I saw that 2%.
Right.
Right.
When I saw that 2% number, I thought, oh my goodness, there's a world of 98% of people that have simply are just, they don't even know what's going on in their portfolios.
1 in 50 has a compass.
Yeah, right. That's shocking. And I'm just excited to reach that 98% of people.
There you go.
Paul Winkler, Investor Coaching Show, James Dixon, Evan Barner. We're going to be right back after this. You stay tuned.
Thanks for tuning in to the Investor Coaching Podcast. Now, you may be one of these people that's been listening and realizing, wow, investing, there's a lot more to it than meets the eye, and financial planning, tax laws constantly changing, and recognizing that maybe you might need some help in this area, but you don't want just anybody to help you out. So we have 10 offices in the Middle Tennessee area, and everything that we do is fee only. We align our interests with your interests. So you can get an initial 15-minute phone call with any one of our offices just by going to paulwinkler.com/call. That's it. Everyone in the office is run by somebody with 20 plus years experience. They're all degree planners. They all have academic backgrounds in investing, and you can get the help that you need. So if you want to set up a complimentary phone consultation, just go to paulwinkler.com/call. And we look forward to seeing you soon.
All right, we are back. Investor Coaching Show. Paul Winkler, Evan Barnard, James Dixon. James.
How you doing, Paul? It's good to see you, man.
I'm so glad to see you, man. It's just so cool. Yeah, so, you know, I think it's, you know, the other thing I think is fascinating is the new academic research coming out in relationship to how to reduce expenses.
Yeah.
You know, because we've talked about this before. If you look at some of these mutual fund companies, and they have these funds to pull you in. And it reminds me of when I was a kid going into the music store, and there was one music store that would charge less than anybody else for drumsticks. And I go, what are you guys doing? How do you do that? I mean, you're charging less than all your competitors for these sticks. I know you're paying the same amount as everybody else. And they're like, yeah, Paul, you know, because they knew I was a very inquisitive guy. So they were pulling me aside.
Young
and they
Sheldon.
They're saying, okay, Paul, well, we got this thing. It's called Loss Leader. And we are willing to lose money or break even just to get feet in the door. Mm-hmm. Right. Get people in the door, and then they will buy other things. Drum heads, they'll buy drums, they'll buy, you know, they'll buy guitar strings or whatever. You know, so, you know, you look at the mutual fund industry, and you've got funds out there that charge no management fees. And you go, well, how do they do that? Well, number one, what they're doing is they're making money on securities lending, and they're keeping all the money to themselves.
Or the spread. Yeah, any of it.
Yeah. They are not running a charity, folks. You think that you're beating the system. Anytime you think you're beating the system by getting a lower price and, you know, you're really getting one over on the man. Guess what? The man's probably getting one over on you. Yeah.
The insurance companies have taller buildings than the roofing companies.
Yeah. And the mutual fund companies have pretty tall buildings too.
Right.
You know, it's the reality of it is, no, they know more than you think that they do. So what happens is they get you in that way. And then what happens is that area where they have no management fees. So what asset class, guys?
Large U.S.
Yeah. Yes. And what's the lowest performing historically area of the market long run? What would we expect the lowest performance to be in a typical diversified portfolio that we would use?
Of the equity category?
Yeah, of the equity category.
Large U.S.
Yeah,
US.
Large U.S. So basically, you have the second, the other asset category does better, which historically would be most of the time.
Right.
Which would be most of the time. And it's going to be squirrel. It's going to be shiny object. You're going to be over there and you'll be paying way more in expenses than you ever dreamt, but you were pulled in on the thing that costs nothing.
Yeah.
And then you think, oh, they just love me at that mutual fund company. You know what? Go ahead.
Well, no, I wanted to expand on the large U.S. companies, large blends specifically.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we say that that's the lowest performing equity category over time.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to hear that as it's a bad category.
That's right.
That's a fair point.
It's you know, the long-term return is still 10% over time. It's, you know, smalls 12, small value 14 so forth.
Right.
But why is it the lowest performing asset category? I think is important for people to understand is it's because they're good companies.
And good companies
They aren't as risky. They've made their mistakes. They can, in today's world, they can still make a mistake.
Yeah.
But they have $2 billion in cash to hide a multitude of sins if something happens. You know, it's not that they're bad companies. It's they're so good and they don't have to pay as much to use your money.
And here's the funny thing, though. You know, you say it's less risky, but you go and stick everything in there.
Yes,
And you could go, you know, 20 years here and 15 years there. And you can go long, long periods of time with no returns.
Right. And then
you are not going to stick through that.
Correct.
Because we talk about, you know, what is the biggest reason investors get lower returns? And it really is behavior.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
When we look at that.
This may be a different segment, actually. But you know, we were talking earlier about what we've done in the process and the fact we teach and we, you know, encourage clients that this can be understood and, you know, that they can get it.
Yeah.
And that is critical, but that's external. I think the other thing that we've brought to the table over the years is helping investors figure out their why and their purpose, not just the external of, yes, you can understand it, but why are you playing the game in the first place? And where this is coming from, I was actually at a Maxwell event. John Maxwell.
Okay, gotcha. Playing the game as in
why have you earned money over the last 40 years?
You earn money, you put
what
some
aside. What
are you
saving it for?
What are you doing? What's your life going to be about?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay, all right,
and,
all right.
You know, if you don't have a why,
right,
it's much easier to get swayed off the path. It's much easier to stock time. It's much easier to chase gold or Bitcoin or something if you don't have some purpose to hold up against the investment decision. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the other huge part that we bring to the table for clients.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely critical because you look at when people that have overcome challenges, you know, you go, so why were some people able to overcome their challenges of not eating correctly when they went through heart surgery and they did stay with the change? You know, they did make the changes, or because they quit smoking because they needed, or they got released from prison, but they stayed out. They weren't, mm-hmm. you know, part of the recidivism statistics. Why is it that certain people were able to do it? And a lot of it comes down to that they had community and people.
Yeah, right.
And it was, and they were doing things because we rarely will ever do something because of ourselves solely. Mm-hmm. It's usually the people that we love around us and that we care for around us. And what I find that is that if we don't have people that we're attached to, that we love, that we care for, our family and those types of things, we do tend to move towards stuff, objects.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I just need more and more and more and more and more and more and more money. And that's all I think about. And when you are driven by more and more and more and more, that may sound good, but the problem is, uh-huh. is what people do is to get more and more and more. That's when they start to move to get rich quick schemes, you know, go to some kind of an investment that's going to make them, you know, very, very rich. And that's where they make mistakes.
Right.
And that's where they end up with less, ironically. By going after more, they end up with less. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why, Evan, what you're saying is so important, that you have to get into that. What am I here? What am I doing this for? What's the game? Like you said, use the word game.
Yeah.
It's what game am I playing? What am I doing? What I'm doing for? Who am I doing it for? And I think that's why it's so critical to really spend some time thinking about it. And what hit me is the one guy that was up there speaking at the conference, and he was talking about a guy
uh-huh.
that had come in with like $4 or $5 million, remember?
Uh-huh.
And then he made the comment that he was working with this huge investment firm that is on the corner of every small town in America.
Right.
Shall remain nameless.
I might have something on them this week.
Yeah, Edward Jones. And they basically, he says, I've never had this conversation before where I really got, and this is why he was so attracted to the process because gosh, now I'm thinking about what am I doing all this for?
Right.
And then when you get that, then you can be a lot more disciplined and do the right things around your investing because you're not doing it for more and more and more and more and more. You can be more prudent because you're recognizing that you don't have to knock it out of the park.
Right.
And the reality is, when you try to knock it out of the park, that's what you end up with less.
You strike out.
That's exactly. That's
home run hitters.
Yeah,
home
you're
run
trying.
Hitters lots of times have the most strikeouts.
Exactly, James. Dead on right.
Hey, this is Paul Winkler. Hope you enjoyed today's edition of the Investor Coaching Show. If you want to learn more about what we do, go to our website, paulwinkler.com. You can watch some of the videos there, and if you're not already a client, you can set up a free initial consultation. Until next time, I'm Paul Winkler, reminding you that I believe that more educated investors are more confident investors, and confident investors are more successful investors. Have a great one. Advisory services offered through Paul Winkler, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor. The opinions voiced and information provided in this material are for general informational purposes only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what investments are appropriate for you, please consult with a financial advisor. Paul Winkler, Inc. does not provide tax or legal advice. Please consult your tax or legal advisor regarding your particular situation.